is just somehow exciting. And it's kind of strange being in HR and TA, right? When you start seeing like David Hasselhoff turn up and give a talk, you think like it's a bit incongruous why he's there. But it is kind of cool to see people you recognize. So I'm pleased to hear you got some heroes coming up for your, is this a live event you're going to be doing, Nicole? What's the thing again?
Yeah, so we do have our Inspire conference. I think we're live now. Hello, everybody. Yes, we have our Inspire conference coming up in November with a number of, amazing speakers and whether they're celebrity or industry, I would say celebrities, if you will. I know they announced the big one, our celebrity guest, Dan Levy, which is very exciting. I think it topped last year with Mindy Kaling is like, who could they choose? But I'm pretty excited about that.
And that's where all the marketing budget has gone, folks. So you need to know why iSIM's like smaller digital footprint this year is because all of it's gone to the speaker feeder. Okay, we are live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 122. Bringing it to you every Friday. And we have got a special show for you today, folks. We've completely changed the format of this because I think it is a topic that we need to care about. And it's also about a demographic we need to listen to more. We talk about early career talent a huge amount. We research them, we think about it, but are we actually listening to what they got to say? So today's topic is going to be about what Gen Z, folks that have been born between 1995 and 2010, I believe. So people who are entering the workforce for the first time after pandemic, what do they think about the world of work? What do they think about recruiters? What do they think about how they choose which employer they want to go forward with? So super interesting and valuable information. Anyway, before we kick off, just a quick sound check as we usually do on Crowdcast. That's our primary way we're channeling this talk. If you can hear us okay on Crowdcast, please say hello. Let me know in the chat screen there. We're also multicasting on LinkedIn, folks. So I can see that we're live there. So I hope the heck you can hear me okay. Let me know if you can hear me okay on LinkedIn. Give me a thumbs up or a yes, Hong. I celebrate your LinkedIn live. There's all kinds of weird emojis there. It's not like or dislike. It's like, yes, we publicly support your view. So give me one of those. And we are also on, we should be on Facebook as well in the Facebook group. So if you are on Brain Food, online community on Facebook and you can hear me okay, please let me know. That would be good to know. As a bonus, we are live on Periscope as well, which most people don't know about, but it's still there. Anyway, looks like people can hear me okay. That is totally fine. Okay, let me introduce my co-host secondly, because this is a new person that's never been on Brain Food Live before, never been a co-host of Brain Food Live, but she's going to do an awesome job. It's Nicole Tucker. How are you doing, Nicole?
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm super pumped to be here this morning and this afternoon in where you're based out of in the UK, but very excited to be on this conversation with you with Brain Food Live today.
Nicole, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself and what it is that you do for a living?
Yes, of course. So hi, Nicole Tucker here. I am the manager of talent acquisition at iSIMS. I've been with our business 9 years, have seen the organization grow tremendously in that time. I've had the fortunate opportunity to manage the team of talent acquisition partners, recruiters partnering across the business, growing our business globally. So very excited to be here.
Amazing. And actually, with 9 years, that means you have seen the journey, right? I mean, that's one of the great pleasures, I think, of being in recruiting is that you can see the growth of the company from a smaller point to, you know, something at a larger point. Oh, there's Saurabh saying, hey, he's a customer. Say nice things, Saurabh. Let's talk about, let's review the newsletter firstly. So Nicole, quickly on this, what do you think? Did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what did you think about it? What was interesting?
Yeah, no, of course. Of course I read it. So yeah, a couple of things that popped out to me. First, that code switching article by Dorothy Dalton. That was fascinating. Just thinking about, you know, bringing your whole self to work. And I know this idea of inclusion and being able to sort of have the opportunity to make sure employees have that ability to bring their whole selves to work is important because it impacts the ability and production of how they work at your company. I know it's something that I really found important and, you know, something that I know at iSIMS we're thinking about as well.
Do you know what the that was such a Dorothy is such a smart writer. She people should follow her newsletter. I've just sent the post in the crowdcast there. But she's taking this idea from linguistics, code switching, where you know, multilingual people can typically switch in different registers and stuff. But sometimes you have to do that with your identity. Imagine the mental effort required to have to do that to be a different person in work than you are out of work. And you have to kind of create a new image for yourself, almost maintaining a different personality. That takes mental energy. And I think her well-researched post there was to say that is actually a drain on productivity. Because if you're creating an environment where half your employees don't feel they can be themselves in your business, all that energy is spent on maintaining this performance when in fact it should be spent on doing their job and contributing to the company. So super important to create these inclusive cultures that can be welcoming to different personalities so that we can, you know, drop a lot of these things that are not us, you know?
No, absolutely.
Cool. what else was interesting, Nicole?
Yeah, so I need to buy her book now, but Aaron Myers, Culture book, that was just watching a little bit in the culture map that she's created. Obviously, you know, as we've continued to grow and expand globally here at iSIMS, that's something that I personally think about as well, managing a team that is not just based in North America, but team members based in the UK, both London and, you know, Dublin. So it is something that we're constantly thinking about. And then also the people we're bringing on board, hiring across all these different countries, and making sure we have, it's almost the self-awareness that, you know, your perspective and how you think about yourself and your culture and what you impart on somebody else's culture and how they work and, you know, thinking about recruitment in general. It's fascinating to say the least.
Erin Meyer is so funny as well. I don't know whether you've ever seen her speak, deliver a talk or whatever. But she's like one of these people that's just so annoying. She's like so intelligent. She's so successful. She's got like a family. She's also like a comedian on stage. It's like everything's like amazing. But she's a really, really good speaker. And she's written a book, obviously, called The Culture Map, which is describing how, you know, different cultures are on a different scale. I think she's one of the first people to describe sort of, are you an individualist or you're a communitarian type culture? Are you direct or indirect? You know, all of these different ways to measure culture. And I've just shared the link there. A guy called Simon Wardley, who, by the way, is another person you should follow. Really strange fellow on Twitter, but really, really smart. And the way he's simply talking about how he just taken a Maya visual, but it describes, you know, various stereotypical country cultures on whether they are sort of direct or indirect. And that's very important in case you think all Dutch people are rude, for instance. You know, they're not rude. They're just like hyper direct, you know, intolerant of small talk. You know, they're just like straight in. And in fact, they would even be kind of would think the prevarication, you know, the evocation, to equivocate, if you like, and not be straight is actually offensive, because you're not being honest. So, you know, but that can be very abrupt to people who are not used to this. So yeah, definitely need to read it, especially as the world is remote, right? We're starting to hire people from everywhere. So you can't just walk around thinking your culture, your values look like this. Therefore, everyone needs to fall into that. They're going to all behave in different ways. Fascinating stuff. Okay, one more, Nicole, before we get into the meat of this topic today. One more from last week.
Yeah, no, I was watching the YouTube on the cutting edge understanding of AI systems with Jack Clark, just in terms of how, you know, the policy around AI and how that's shifting and how it needs to shift even further with respect to, you know, how we need to be responsible and how, you know, I would say companies that are innovating and in respect to what they're building, it's almost taking off like the rocket ship, whereas the policymakers may be so far behind from you know, what's happening and you know, that I would say that loop of just understanding and not just taking things ad hoc, but having that systematic way of evaluating and almost being on the pulse before the pulse happens to make those, I would say, informed decisions and be able to elevate what companies are able to do even faster, I think is pretty exciting.
You know what, there's a load of great talks on AI on that channel. And I don't think enough people kind of watch it, because COGEX is kind of a UK conference, but it's a global conference run by UK people. But I do think they've managed to bring together some of the best brains talking about AI. And a lot of it interfaces what we do. You know, how it interfaces in the world of work, like how do we use technology in an ethical way and stuff like this. And this talk, which again I've just shared in the stream there, super interesting because it's talking about this lag that we have between the technology, the adoption of it, and then it's almost like after it's already been implemented and adopted, like the lawmakers then say, right, here's the law. It's a kind of relevant for 2014, but you know, we're 2021 now. Like how do we close that gap? Because it's oftentimes we'll be creating laws for either products that don't exist anymore or they're used in different ways. I have a feeling GDPR is a bit like that. You know, I mean, I think, you know, for the European team members at iCIMS, you're probably familiar with this. I mean, obviously, it's a global tool. You have to think about it. But a great deal of GDPR, I think, was, designed for a world that isn't quite where we're at and has produced basically an internet experience where we're spending all our time, you know, half our time confirming, yes, I agree, before we get access to the information. So, annoying, but also important.
No, it's absolutely true. And I think it goes to the idea that the innovation and infusion of technology, and whether it's AI or others with respect to how we operate, it's continuing to evolve constantly. And that knee-jerk reaction tends to be so delayed when you think about policy. And I just found that to be kind of interesting, being at a software company that invests in products that are also AI focused. So.
Yeah, you got to think about it and almost predict how slow politicians might be. So you can time.
I see what you did there.
you do though, don't you? I mean, basically, you know, you can't assume that they're going to know what they're doing. So they'll end up sort of. I mean, you can even watch the, you know, obviously you bring in the likes of Zuckerberg up to these committees, and it's embarrassing because these people don't actually understand what they're talking about. And Zuckerberg's sitting there and he's like, have to really baby step these people through it. And you think, how is that going to solve anything? You got two people that actually don't understand the basic concepts here. Let's move on. Okay, let's talk about this report. So can you give us a bit of a background on the class of 2021 report that was conducted? And then we're going to bring on Ray, and she's going to talk us through the data on this. How did this report happen? And you know, what was the circumstances that created it? And what actually, what was the thing? Did you, how many people did you speak to in the end?
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately, I can speak to this report is something that iCIMS has actually run for a few years now. And it surveys both the class audience as well as the, I would say, the talent acquisition audience with respect to their experiences recruiting those in a certain class of. So those that are graduating that year or had graduated within that year, and being able to ask them questions around how and, you know, they've interacted with either the recruiting process, the talent attraction strategy, what they're looking for from their current employers, what they expect from a salary, and being able to look at those two audiences and make those comparisons. So we've actually been running this for a few years now. I believe they surveyed thousands of people in multiple countries, both UK, domestically. I know Raya is much closer to it and can tell you a little bit more about the science and the methodology they use to be able to collect this. But really, it's what you get from it and how you take that information and how that impacts what really how you think about recruiting those that are your next leaders, your early career individuals that are building the foundation for your company, that are growing your business, especially at some of those early entry points, whether it's internships or those first-time professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring on Ray. I did not actually know that you did this every year. So that's my ignorance of it. But it seems like a really interesting thing to do it over time, because then, you've got comparisons over time. So, and there she is, Raya. How are you doing?
Perfect timing.
Hi, Raya. See you. How are you? And guys? Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is maybe the third iteration that we've done this, the third year or the second year.
This is the sixth one I've been a part
sixth
of.
Sixth one. Oh, there you go.
But I've been licensed 5 years, so that makes sense. It's the sixth or the seventh. But yes, it's been going on for quite a while now.
Raya, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself, what it is you do for iCIMS?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. I'm Raya Moss, Director of Data Insights and Customer Intelligence at iCIMS. Like I said, I've been at iCIMS about 5 years. I spent the last 3.5 or 4 years actually in the labs department working on data science and AIML. I was enjoying your guys' conversation there a little bit as kind of an early adopter in the tech world of looking at AIML and how we can use it in HR. But about a year and a half ago, I moved into a role at iCIMS in customer success to actually use our data analysis and the data that we're getting out of our system to help our customers make decisions in this, I don't like to call it the new normal because I refuse to call it normal, this new world that we seem to be navigating that changes every few months on us. So we get to mine the iSwim's proprietary data set to create these reports. We do a monthly kind of snapshot report of what's going on in the last month, and then we do two kind of big doozy reports similar to the first one is class of 2021 that we're talking about today. And the other one is an annual kind of workforce report that looks at the workforce as a whole.
Cool, very interesting. So the class of 2021 report is taken from proprietary data aggregated from all of iSIM's customers, right? So we've got can you give us some numbers in terms of like how many data points that we're talking about here?
I can. So to give you a sense of kind of the scale of this database, in 2020, iSIMS helped process 120 million applications. So when we say we're starting to see trends in applicants, they're pretty significant values. That resulted in about 3.8 million hires that we're using to analyze and create this data. And as Nicole said, the really cool thing about these big surveys is that we use the proprietary data set of iSIMS to say, we know what's actually happening. And then we do survey both HR professionals as well as graduating seniors to say, not just what happened, but what are expectations and where are expectations aligned and where are they misaligned?
Right. And what are they actually, how do they feel about it? Because sometimes how, you know, they don't have access to the reality, but they have the access to the experience. And those two things are totally different or could be different. So let's dive into this. What actually happened, Rhea?
let me preface this by saying kind of why this is so important right now. So, you know, it feels like we can't run away. And I'm sure all of you are feeling this too. We can't run away. Even in like you close LinkedIn and you close your work email, but it feels like it's on the news every night or it's on the Today Show in the morning here in the US. There's a labor shortage going on right now. And, you know, at iSIMS, we actually can see that it's not just a labor shortage. It's a labor shortage that's mixed with a huge hiring boom. And what that means is hiring right now feels really, really hard. It feels really hard to find the right candidate. It feels like that candidate has multiple offers. And it feels like there's just not an active labor pool to source these positions for. But a bright spot actually in all of this is the 18 to 24 year olds. So to give you a sense, January to July, when we compare this year to last year, we actually saw a significant increase in applications from this group. So they're up 35%, which is really significant when you consider that the labor pool has kind of slowed down its activity right now. So that's why I say that this is why you should all listen and why we should all care, because right now, this is actually one of the most active, they are the most active generation. They've actually surpassed 25 to 34 year olds in the raw number of applicants coming in. So I think, you know, we all need to think about this isn't just a couple people filling a couple entry level jobs. This is actually our most active talent pool right now.
So with that, go ahead. As a quick snapshot then, Rhea, what you're saying is, hey, everyone's struggling to hire. You may need to look at Gen Z because they're super active, and that's possibly the demographic that's right now ready to go. So, you know, take a look at that group of people rather than, you know, struggle away at these 25, 50, 30 year olds and so on.
Yeah, and Nicole can probably speak to this. I was speaking with a couple of our clients, actually did an in-person event for the first time this last week, and I said, this is not the time to try to hire someone with 10 years experience. It's just, it's really, really hard. The millennial generation, while we all think of millennials, 2 years ago, we talked about the millennials, like they were carefree. And then we all realized that millennials turned 40 this year. They're the ones stuck at home when the daycare is closed. Selfishly, I don't like to admit this. I'm a millennial too, right? Two kids, working my full-time job during a pandemic with kids and a dog downstairs. So this millennial generation that we all thought were kind of carefree are actually the generation that we're seeing do things like shelter in place in their job. We did see a lot of millennial women leave the workforce, but this younger generation, some things like colleges going remote actually had them enter the workforce earlier. So it's not just college seniors. We're seeing people work full-time jobs while they're in school. And we're really seeing them kind of pick up their activity of finding this is a great opportunity to get a great job young.
Okay, so Rhea, that's an interesting insight. So colleges have gone remote as default, obviously for public health reasons, but that's kind of released a lot of labor because these kids that would otherwise have to go to college now are at home. Maybe they've got more flexible time. They're going to do a remote job anyway. So suddenly you can almost dual track this. They could educate as well as deliver work. So yeah.
Think of my college experience, and I had physics lab at 8 o'clock in the morning all the way through to a business law class that ran 6 to 9 p.m. You know, and yes, there's big gaps in the middle, but that didn't really leave a time to go find a 40 hour a week, 8 to 5, 9 to 6 type work. you know, people picked up odd jobs here and there, but it, you know, no one I was in school with necessarily was working a 9-to-5. Now that school is, especially with things like asynchronous learning, they can take their courses, take their tests when they're not at their full-time job. So we are definitely seeing an uptick there.
Yep. What else?
I think, you know, I picked out, you know, happy to share the full report. There's a lot in it. I picked out a couple of them that I personally found really interesting, and I will actually go back and call out the poll. So the poll you guys were being asked, what do we think is the top priority for Gen Z candidates? I noticed that there were zero votes for, I'm sorry, I just clicked the wrong button. There's zero votes for on-site work environment. I'm going to give you a stat that I think your minds are all going to start spinning here. So only 2% of Gen Z wants to work remote full-time. So I know 2%, 98% of Gen Z wants some sort of in office, maybe a day, maybe 3 days, maybe 5 days, some sort of in office work. You know, I think that when I first read that, I'm like, there's a typo. I think you guys missed a number. Is it 52? Right. And, you know, 26% said that remote work might be a selling point, but only 2% really truly wants to work remotely full time. And I totally agree with you. So what's interesting, though, is that 88% of HR professionals says they're willing to hire full-time remote entry-level talent. So that disconnect, that desire, and we can dive way into it. I'll give you a couple other stats. But the 2% number is really going to show that Gen Z wants a pre-pandemic normal work experience. They missed out on a lot of things. You know, they missed out on maybe college graduation. They missed out on their senior year. They're missing out on a lot of kind of normal life events, right. And they don't want starting their career to be any different because of everything going on right now. So I think that one's really interesting. The other one I thought was really interesting, and maybe this is me being an old millennial. I thought the TikTok generation, right? This is the group that all they want to do is sit on their phones and make videos. And obviously I'm overgeneralizing here. 97% of HR professionals says they're going to use video to hire over the next 12 months, right? We think we all know that. That's the world we're living in today. But over 80% of students think that they actually present themselves in an interview better in person than on a video. I'm like, what? I thought these are the people that don't want to see each other in person. This is the, you know, sit in your room on your phone generation, right? But what they think, and we have to really separate out what they want to do socially and how they feel they interact best with their generation and their friends versus how they think they're going to present themselves professionally. And again, it kind of goes back to that notion of just because they had this pandemic that's shifted how they socialize and we did things like Zoom happy hours, that doesn't mean that when it comes to a normal job interview, they actually do feel they present themselves better in a physical three-dimensional interaction.
I got to be honest, the Zoom happy hour is such a millennial and boomer idea. I mean, anybody in Gen Z who's listening to this, please comment and let me know what you think of the idea of a Zoom happy hour. Would that be something you'd embrace, or would that be like just cringeworthy, like embarrassing experience? Anyway, Rhea, there's like two really interesting things you said there. Let's deal with each of those in turn. Firstly, I think, Komal, you mentioned it absolutely right. We've been looking at the world of remote working through a millennial lens. So if you're a person that has had the commute for 10 years, you've done all of that, you're not going out anymore, you've got kids, you've got like stuff at home, you've got a nice house, etc. Of course, working from home is awesome. But imagine if you're just coming out of a year of lockdown where you've not been able to go to college properly, you've been at home, you've been at your parents' home, and now you're being told, hey, by the way, there's no office. Stay in your parents' home. You know, how is that in any way welcoming? You know, no, they want to go in and start their lives as independent people. And maybe, you know, companies need to facilitate for that. That's so, so interesting. And I think all the language, I think you're right, Ray, all the language we've been talking about is generally being very pro-remote, which I, of course, am also pro-remote. But it's generational. We've not thought about, hey, different generations are going to think about this differently. And how do we do that? Are we going to cut off the young generation completely and say, you know what, we're a mature only company, which, by the way, folks, the companies that were remote first remote only, should I say, pre-COVID, typically didn't hire graduates. They typically didn't do it. They hired people that had prior remote experience. And that almost always means someone who's already a veteran. And because they couldn't deal with the onboard properly, they couldn't deal with, you know, the enculturation properly. And we've just like segued into this idea that remote is the be all end all without understanding, you know, what about, you know, long-term talent pipelining? How are we going to forget about those folks? What are your thoughts on this, Nicole? Actually, interesting your thoughts on this, because you're a hirer. I mean, there must have been people in iSIMS that said, yeah, great, let's go full remote. I mean, at what point did we start talking about the early career folks? And, you know, what do we do about that generation?
Yeah, no, I think first and foremost, the data is definitely eye-opening and interesting. And I agree with all the comments with respect to, you know, mind blown for sure. When you think about the experiences that you're laying out, ultimately we did move to, you know, a 100% remote workforce at the beginning of the pandemic. But as we've, you know, entered into this sort of environment where things are starting to open up a little bit, being able to offer the opportunity for, you know, work where you need to work, and being able to have that, you know, voluntarily, being able to go back into an office and spend time there. I think the opportunity and potentially the thought to think about is, yes, individuals want to be in an office. Those starting their career want to be in an office, but what about the people managing them? And what kind of environment does that look like when you have leaders who are, you know, ultimately wanting to be remote 100% or not as interested in a full-time in office position and being able to meet in the middle? Because part of the opportunity of working in an office and having that experience is learning from peers, learning from your manager, hearing those hallway conversations and understanding what that means to your job and how you can be, you know, a better, you know, sales development rep, you know, hearing your other colleagues sort of talk to their customers on the phone. But the person that's leading them, if they're not there or if they're there only certain days, being able to sort of, I would say, come in the middle and not say compromises, you know, everybody is losing, but how are you working together to make sure that everybody feels like they're able to bring their whole selves to work and they're able to bring their passion, their enthusiasm, and ultimately be that productive employee, whether it is in an office full-time, hybrid, or 100% remote, and being able to balance those, I would say, those three elements, if you will.
And Nicole, I think you hit the nail on the head. The Gen Z doesn't want to be in an office because they physically like office buildings. They want to be in the office because there's so much. And I always kind of try to do this exercise when I talk about this report to say, we're all acting surprised, right? But let's really, I'm not going to admit how many years back we have to go here. Think back about yourself at 21, 22. You finished college, you finished at your university, and you're starting your first, you know, I called it like grown-up job. And the things you were looking forward to, right? It's funny because now those things are like, ugh, I don't want to go sit in the boardroom because I don't need to be in a meeting. I'm like, can we make this meeting an email? But when I was 22 years old, even if the meeting wasn't for me, if I could just go listen and learn and absorb. And I remember having a mentor that I think I bothered 37 times an hour because I didn't really know what I was doing. And I was just a sponge to watching what everyone else did, watching how they interacted, watching how they socialized, all of that, you know, like really going back to being a 22-year-old, I didn't physically want to be in an office. I wanted to learn how to be a professional. And I did that by just watching. And I think that candidly, joining a 30-minute Zoom here and there that might get cut short and everyone's excited to get 10 minutes back, you don't get that walk to and from the conference room, bond, learn how to be social but professional simultaneously. If we're doing that in a remote position, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone, of just getting on, you know, as a millennial who's got a lot going on personally, getting on, hanging up at the end, I don't want to sit in small talk for 10 minutes. Now we've gone back a little bit to the office and kind of, we joke now, you go to the office, you don't actually get your job done. It's where you socialize. It's where you kind of connect with other people. We let some of our interns, we offered for them to come into the office. There's three interns that sit right outside my office. And every single time I've been there, every single one of them is sitting there right next to one of my data analysts who was quarantined at home with his parents while working. And he was, I'm not joking, lined up at the front door the day that we might open the office. I mean, I think he's been there every single day because to him, being at home and in that environment 24 hours a day is not a perk. And so I think it's really interesting, you know, especially for those folks who may have been quarantined in their apartment by themselves. They didn't get a social life. A lot of work is also your social life. And I remember that being 22. I moved to a new city. All the friends I made were coworkers. Even outside of work on a Saturday, I was hanging out with coworkers. And so they want that social side as well as just the professional side.
Yeah, we're lacking this osmotic information transfer, aren't we? That's for you, Tom. Basically, where, you know, you're not learning by being trained formally. You're learning by listening to someone more experienced handle that situation. And be able to think, right, now I know how, you know, the subtleties of that conversation, that's how you do it. And obviously all of that goes. And I don't think it can be replicated easily in remote. Maybe not at all. It's a very different type of company you're going to make if that's the decision you go for.
I think it becomes much more intentional. And it's not that it can't be done, because it absolutely can be done. I would say, if nothing else, this pandemic has showed us how we can operate in a remote world and do so that's effective. I mean, at the end of the day, we hired individuals who were in an internship program, 100% remote, that only started coming into our office in July of this year, and only those that were local to our office. So being able to keep those individuals engaged and provide programming, education, and really, I would say, an opportunity to make an impact in the 10, you know, weeks or so that they were with our business is extremely vital. We've hired individuals who are just starting their career in a 100% remote way, but it is about that intentionality and making sure that you are putting, you know, purpose. And unlike, I would say, and I know we pointed out those hallway conversations, that sort of organically learning experience when you do have somebody that you can kind of listen into, it is about providing that avenue for individuals to make sure they feel comfortable engaging with somebody and asking them questions and having that mentor, having those mentors across your business as they are starting their career, whether those are people they can meet with, engage, and socialize in person, or if it's not, because even those that could go to an office, there are many people that may not be able to. And they're wonderful, smart, intelligent individuals who make an impact on our business every day as well. And we would want to make sure those avenues and channels are also open and available so that people can continue to learn and grow from those, not just in an office, but elsewhere as well.
All right. Crazy idea. Here's what I think is going to happen. I reckon that we're going to be age stratified in the office. So in other words, office is going to be young person, early career, you go in there. If you're a manager, part of your condition of being a manager is be in the office, right? That's the thing. If you don't want to be a manager, individual contributor, you're a veteran, fine. You can work wherever you need and you'll migrate out as you grow up, get married, have kids, whatever. And you think, right, enough of the commute. So there will be a change of demographics as to who is in the office and who isn't. And it's going to be based on where you're at in your life circumstances. What do you think of that?
Hung, I want to add to that because I think you're kind of onto something, but I also think there's going to be this new role that evolves where you don't have to be the manager, because you can be a leader, a cultural leader, a individual contributor, but a senior leader. I think you're going to end up with this role of, you know, I have a lot of folks on our customer success team. I sit inside customer success that I'm not a customer success manager. That's probably not the right title. A lot of those managers aren't located in the same state we are, but I've found myself starting to bond with some of them that come in regularly just as a senior leader in their org. Not at all, you know, I'm not any of their lines up the org chart, but as leaders, I think you kind of are going to end up with pods of people where it's not necessarily a mentor, but where they get that sort of senior influence from folks that may not be their manager, their functional manager. And I do think, especially with more senior individual contributors, I think about, like, I came out of tech, right? I used to be in data science in my last role at iSIMS. And I think you have things like architects who can be that senior leader mentor type and sort of create that culture and be that person that the interns look to, even if they don't actually do the same day job as that younger generation.
What are you saying, Ray? Are you saying that the people managers, they're gone? Like, no need for them?
No, absolutely not. I think there's actually very much a need for them. I think from a functional perspective, the manager is very important. The manager is going to teach them how they do the tasks of their job. But I think there's something about learning the culture. And we were talking about learning to be both a professional and social at the same time. I think they'll learn those skills from other senior leaders who may be around that do not need to be their manager. You were talking about getting married, having kids. That group, there may be a phase of your life where you mostly be a manager from a functional manager perspective. And then as, you know, life allows it, you'll see those senior leaders start to come back to the office and be kind of social influences and have them be the people that they see walk around the office and interact and, you know, their body language, their mannerisms, you know, when, how much is too much of socialization, right? All those things, water cooler, coffee machine conversations, they'll start to have those and learn how to bond with more senior executives through that type of an interaction.
Very, very interesting. Okay, folks, if you're listening to this, you've got any questions for Rhea or Nicole or anybody else who's about to come on screen, make sure you ask them in ask a question section at the bottom of the screen there. Pop the questions in there. We'll get to them at the end of the show. Okay, let's move on to the second thing you said, Rhea, which is about the communication style. So assumption was that, hey, TikTok generation is going to just want to do video. But the data you're getting is saying, no, actually, they want to get the in-person. Firstly, tell us a little bit about that. How is this a straight question you asked in the survey, or how did you come to that sort of that circumstance there?
Yeah, so we asked in the survey, you know, how do you feel you best present yourself in a professional interview experience? And like I said, 80% of folks said, college grads said that they believe they best present themselves in person professionally. I also think, again, going back to the first question, right?
Overrating their cologne there, aren't they? It's like, no.
Yeah, I think, But like we were saying, right, this is every generation of work, of people joining the workforce, learn from the generation before them. And all they know is kind of what they've seen, their older sibling, you know, their older cousin, maybe their parents, although I feel like the parents get a little bit further out. The advice they get, if I had someone ask me from this generation, what do I do to make my video interview best? I'd say, candidly, I don't know. I've never done a pre-recorded video interview, right? So all of their mentors, all of what they learned in their courses around joining the workforce were around what used to be. So I think there's a notion of a professional interview, you know, is an in-person interview. Now folks like us who've been Zooming for a year and a half, now I've gotten so used to having professional conversations via video chat, it's really not weird to me at all. But that's a new thing because I've been through the last 18 months that this generation, I think they've only had social interactions via video. They haven't necessarily had professionally.
That last line, I think everyone needs to pay attention to, Rhea. Basically, video for the Gen Zs coming up is generally being a social activity, not a pro activity. The reverse is true for the generation above, right?
Yes.
Prior to this period, how many people did you know that are actually doing regular video calls for social? It was like, no, we're still on phone most of the time. So we've got a reverse familiarity with video. So that's something we need to bear in mind, because I'm sure when we're recruiting younger folks or early entry talent, it's going to go to a place where we're comfortable, but it may not be a place where they're comfortable. So super, super interesting. Okay.
I think we're getting better too, because I think things like, you know, Nicole was talking about, we did some virtual internships. I think in 2020, companies didn't know what was going on, and a lot of companies just didn't do an internship with everything being virtual. Now we're starting to see people have virtual internships, which gives people virtual professional experience before entering the workforce. So I would expect these numbers to be a little bit better next year, but the class of 2021 really didn't get that shot.
Okay, what's gonna happen is, let's bring on some Gen Z people, because we've got some really interesting data, but you know what, we're too old to talk about it. let's bring on some other people that are actually part of that data set, and they could tell us a little bit about how they are feeling about the world of work in general. So let's bring these guys in. Let's get Rachel in, get Senya in as well. I think Kennedy is there also. Okay, here we go. Who's that? It's Rachel, but the camera's not on. That's that possibly an example.
You'd like to present yourself in person, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, who's that? Somebody's come on. That's Senya.
Hello.
Hi, Senya. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Very well. And we have Kennedy there as well. Kennedy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. And Rachel, can you hear us? Or I don't think she can. What I'm going to do is try and bring her on. I'll remove her there and I'll invite her back. Okay, so Senya, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do? And then Kennedy, can you follow that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Senya. I'm currently a master's student studying in the UK, and kind of currently looking for my first entry-level role. actually starting this autumn.
Fantastic. And Kennedy?
Hi. So I'm currently an undergrad senior, and I have been accepted to a master's program in the United States. And I'm currently looking for an internship for the spring semester.
Fantastic. Great stuff. And great to see you both there. Rachel, I think there's going to be a comms problem there. You stick with Senya and Kennedy here, firstly. Let's deal with the first big question, the idea of like remote. Everybody that we're speaking to in our generation is kind of like pretty bullish on remote, say, hey, this is the way forward. Maybe we lose the office, it's gone. And then we have Rhea coming up to say only 2% of the generation that you guys belong to are saying this is the optimal solution. What are your thoughts on that? Is that true amongst you and your cohort, or is it something that, you know, again, the data, something wrong with the data here?
Yeah, so
don't be outraged, Rhea. I have to ask.
No, I think that the data is pretty spot on. I would say that Gen Z wants to be in person mostly, because unlike millennials, most of us do not have children yet. So a lot of us are just at home and we're missing that social aspect, of, as you have alluded to. And so I think I would definitely prefer to be able to come in one or two days a week, if not three, and then be able to work from home on Monday or Friday or any other day that I would possibly need to do so.
Yeah, I'm kind of exactly the same. When I saw the 2%, I wasn't that surprised, to be honest. That definitely is something that I agree with. I actually just did a virtual internship this summer, and I was really hoping to get that office experience. I feel like I was really missing those real in-person connections with people and actually kind of getting to know people outside of just those, you know, Zoom calls. So kind of, yeah, just as Kennedy said, I would also prefer, you know, 1 to 3 days in the office and then maybe kind of some flexibility over when that is, whether it's kind of 1 week in and then 1 week remote or something like that. I feel like those are kind of the things that I would be interested in.
Okay, let's dive into this virtual internship, because I think a lot of people are very, a lot of employers are probably very attracted to this concept. Yeah, great. We'll get a bunch of people doing virtual stuff. It's easy to manage. You know, don't have to provision them and don't have to point out where the toilets are, all that kind of stuff. There's lots of logistical reasons why companies might actually think, yeah, a good idea. But you're saying that was not the best experience ever. This is not on the company that you interned with, but it's just the general experience doing it remotely. What is your experience of that, Senya? Can you describe how it made you feel when you were doing, I guess, this internship?
Of course, yeah. So I kind of spent 3 months at this internship. And at the beginning, you know, the team did make a big effort to include me in things and get me onboarded well. But I did kind of feel almost a bit lonely when I wasn't on calls with people. You know, other than, you know, if I wasn't on a call, I'd be in my flat alone trying to figure things out by myself. And I feel like there's a bigger kind of hurdle to ask someone for help when you are an intern and you're working remotely. If you're in an office, you could kind of just tap someone on the shoulder or just kind of talk to the person next to you and ask them for some advice. But when you're remote, you know, you have to message them and kind of disturb their day. You don't really know what they're doing. And I feel like that definitely makes it a bit more difficult to kind of get onboarded and be a part of the team and get into the work that you're doing faster. So I think definitely there's a longer learning process that kind of is involved with virtual internships.
Okay, so that's a really interesting point. So without almost the line of sight sense, where you know you could see body language, for instance, or you know you could just get a sense as to whether this person's approachable. On a virtual scenario, you don't actually see that because everyone's just an email address or a Slack avatar. Like, how do you know? It doesn't track your mood, right? No. So you feel like intimidated. I feel intimidated to ask Ray or anything, you know, and it's like, holy crap. I'm joking. But that will stop you, and that will stop you actually from asking that question. And therefore you're struggling away on a problem that would take much more longer time that could have been fixed really quickly if that communication channel was open.
Yeah, I definitely feel like, especially in the beginning, especially in the beginning when you don't know the people that well and you don't really know if it's acceptable to kind of just send an email, send a message, try and organize a call. It takes a while to kind of gauge if that's an acceptable line of communication, because you don't really know, and it's almost difficult to then ask that. Definitely kind of as things progressed, I did kind of work up the courage and I was like, can I just, you know, email you whenever I have a question. People were generally very receptive and would always help out, but there's definitely that barrier in the beginning when you don't really know what is the acceptable kind of communication methods, because you haven't, you know, I haven't been in a situation like this before, so it is just definitely more difficult in that sense.
Go ahead, Ray, you about to say something?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's really tough in you know, I've been around a while, is that it's hard to know when you think about things like Teams or Slack, right? If you were to look at my calendar in a given day, I'm red the whole day. It shows that I'm busy. But there are definitely moments that I'm open for a quick question. If I'm physically in an office and I'm, you know, call ends 5 or 10 minutes early, I open my door. There's a moment of knowing this is a good time to bother her or interrupt her, or it's not. And there may be moments, I think we've also lost that like immediate feedback of, I just have one question. And as soon as I get that question, I'm going to move on with this task. But if you send me a ping on Slack or on Teams, sometimes I might get you back in 30 seconds. And sometimes I might just have one of those days where I don't see it till 5 p.m. And now the person has sat waiting and they don't want to ping me again to bother me, but they've already, you know, it's hard to know what level of busier are you virtually.
You know what? That's a really, really clear point. Ray, I want to sit on it just a little bit, because if you look at people's calendars, it's intimidating sometimes, because it's all like colored in and you think, oh my goodness, this person is so busy. There's like, anything I say to this person is going to be negative. But actually, that's just work. It could potentially be interrupterable in that type of situation. So, but you can't tell that. It's not signaled by the calendar. But if you're in line of sight, maybe you've got a chance to check it out. Okay, we have Rachel, but we have also bad sound. But let's see whether Rachel can hear us okay. Rachel, can you hear us?
Are you able to hear me? I can hear you well.
We can hear you well, but there is, unfortunately, some bad audio coming from your end. I wonder whether there's any way we could fix that.
Okay, give me 1 second. I'll try playing around with the settings.
Sorry.
And I see Rachel's actually at our office, so.
Oh, yeah. There we go. See? They want to be there.
They want to be there. Okay, let's talk about this idea of being in office. Let's say, okay, actually, no, before we do that, how could companies do the virtual stuff better? We've talked about how it could be suboptimal. I'm thinking, would it help if people had readmes where you can say, look, this is how you contact me, and saying, you know, I'm always generally okay on this channel, but don't do this at this point. Would that make sense? Like, if, do you have any ideas, anybody, about how we could make the virtual experience better for early entry talent?
Yeah. So actually I want to take it back to the interviews. I think when people have the interviews, right, and they're like, oh, pre-record yourself, that is really intimidating because you can't see the body language in that sense. So I think opting out of that makes it a lot better because, you know, the interviewer can ask more questions, they can get to know you better. And from my experience, when I did do that, because you could record yourself as many times as you wanted to, I sat there for like an hour agonizing because you can't see how it's being received, right? You're like, oh no, I messed up here or there. So for me, that's a way that the virtual experience from the very get-go can be improved for sure.
That's really interesting. So the asynchronous video, which I know recruiters love. Nicole, I know you love the asynchronous video. Everyone loves them from a recruiter's point of view because it's like super convenient, right? Just send out an email and just get all these videos back. Perfect. Like zero effort in, like loads of effort back out. But what you're saying, Kennedy, is actually, that's not a 5 minute commit. That could be person like literally taking like over and over redos, how many retakes in order to like deliver what they think is the best response, because it's so much weight on the success of that thing. So we have to kind of think about that. It was super convenient for a recruiter, terrible experience, possibly very bad experience for the candidate.
Thanks. Interestingly enough, it's funny, like hearing you say this, because we call them the TikTok generation, right? this social media generation is used to, if they record something of themselves and put it out there, it's going to be perfect when it goes out there. Right. So I think about it. And if I had to do a video interview and I stumbled on a word, I feel like I'd just keep going. But I feel like the fact that you can start over, and I think about interviewing in real life. And if I said, you know, my brain turned off for a second, I'd say, I'm so sorry. My brain turned off. Okay. Going back on it. But if you're recording this video and it's going to like live in perpetuity, I think there's another feeling of it has to be perfect. Right. So I actually had a quick question if I could, sorry to grab it for a second. So one of the things I think is really useful for employers about these recorded videos is then I can go, well, that person wasn't a fit for my team, but these three other managers in the business are hiring similar people. They can go watch the interview. How would you guys feel about it being a two-way interview, but it was recorded?
I think that that would be great. As long as I've done plenty of video interviews and stuff like that, and I like that so much better because then you get that in person. You can really, like, you can't vibe with a computer screen, but you can with another person and you can read into it. So I think that would be great because then those questions that you asked me could be very helpful to someone else who is potentially looking at me for a position.
And if I can jump in here, the one thing that I think is kind of interesting, I know somebody in the chat called it out, is that it's not just the candidate sort of giving video to an employer, but what is the employer giving to the candidates and being able to showcase their company, their culture, their brand, having that authenticity from, you know, the people that would be in the group that person is joining. And I think the mechanism of using video, that's where I truly feel from a recruitment perspective, that is what changes the game because it really puts the person on the other end of the screen and gives them a wider lens as to the business that they're joining, being able to see some of the people they may interact with, even if it's not in person, even if it's a virtual experience, or hearing from them their experiences as they've grown their career, starting as a, you know, a technical support engineer and moving into product management, and that why that was such a great place to start their career. So I do think that, you know, the use and of video is not just about that one-way experience of candidate, tell me about yourself, tell me why this job is a great fit for you, but also the employers being able to showcase and provide that authenticity of their company to the audience. Because I know Rhea started off this morning or this afternoon talking about how the experience for employers right now is that there's a lot of hiring to be done, but ultimately seems to be a lack of people wanting to apply. There seems to be a lack of candidate pools to tap into. And part of that is, well, what are you putting out to the market about your company as to why you would be an employer of choice? What about that role that you're looking to hire for? Why is that so important? So it is a two-way conversation. And I think that, you know, being able to showcase that and have that live on your career pages, on your LinkedIn pages, whatever pages you're looking to put out there in a video format is huge. But beyond that, because it allows for when you have that conversation, whether it's in person, whether it's in video or a sort of an asynchronous recorded video, that person has a little bit more, I would say, of a enthusiasm because they understand why they're even applying. That's just my perspective. I don't know if anybody on the call from the Gen Z voice would like to sort of chime in and their experiences there as well.
Rachel, let's bring you in. I think the audio is still pretty bad, so I hope you don't mind me occasionally like sticking you on mute there. But I want to ask you this question because you actually gone into iSIMS. You're doing an internship at iSIMS right now. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm working in the talent TA team here, and specifically talent attraction.
Oh, super interesting. So you're a Gen Z person working in a company that's also hiring young people. Like, can you tell us a little bit about your experience of interacting with the generation that you're from? I mean, is there like any common things that people are saying about what they're experiencing in the job search?
I think there's a lot of different things that come out that definitely tie into the class of 2021 report. I found just from talking and working with a lot of the interns that some of the big things, like definitely working in the office, so important to people. I'm here on a Friday, got up at 6 a.m. to get over here and drove an hour down to the office just because I like interacting with other people. But I think another thing, I was talking to a couple people yesterday and they were saying just how many different places they're applying to at this point, because there are so many different options in terms of flexibility, in terms of the way that you're working. I know for me personally, living an hour away from iSIMS, I don't know if this would have been possible if I didn't have the option of working remotely some of the time. So I think with that also comes the challenge of how are we interacting and engaging with people when they suddenly have so many more options available to them? And how are we creating those authentic connections with people when they have so many different places to choose from?
Okay, so that's a really interesting insight. You're saying that the increased flexibilities that employers are implementing, whether it's remote, flexi work, or whatever, has actually expanded the geographical range where it's acceptable, because you're not doing a necessarily doing a daily commute. That's a tough one. 1 hour is probably quite tough, I would say, every single day. But you know what? Doable 2-3 days a week, let's say. So suddenly you've got a larger geographical range. Super interesting. Okay, Rachel, I'm going to stay with us. I'm just going to put you back on mute. There we go. Answer to Steve, no, it was complete accident. Just to answer your question there. In terms of, there was something really interesting I was about to say, but I've forgotten about it. So someone's going to have to like bail me out. It was about what are your thoughts on a company that just live streamed their office? So we thought about, yeah, let's do transparency and all this. But I've seen some of these crazy, always a crazy tech company that's saying, all right, we're going to do it properly. And we're literally going to put the camera on all the time. You can just log in and take a look. Stack Overflow, I think, was one of the first companies that did this way back when. And it was the most boring live stream ever, because obviously people just...
I don't want to watch it.
I was about to say, people sitting behind their computers.
It was just nothing. But I think that wins brownie points, doesn't it? Because you're saying, hey, at least it's us. You know, this is what's happening. Not a lot, but it's there. Is that better, or is that just, what do you think? I mean, thoughts from the Gen Z folks?
Yeah, I don't really see that as being something that I would be actively engaging with. Because I feel like even then you're missing that human aspect and the in-person aspect of actually being in the office. Watching other people be there isn't really, maybe not something that I would personally be interested in.
Well, Hung, actually, I'll take your question that you asked earlier with any ideas of how to make it better. One of the things that my team has done, so we have a new team member who is actually in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So she, even when the offices go back, she will never be physically with us. And one of the things that we implemented to help her with onboarding, and it's important to think about a new employee, but also especially a new Gen Z employee, is we have an hour on our calendar every single day. And sometimes I can make it and sometimes I'm not, that the team just dials in on Zoom and they're available and she can ask questions. And sometimes it's me and sometimes it's, you know, a couple of the analysts and some, whoever can join. It's just kind of a known period of time. And there's no expectations that you get on at 00 minutes and off at 59. But there's just kind of that notion of what I would have normally had in the office of, I try to have my door open for an hour a day. And we've kind of created that virtually to say, you know, we started it out, we thought it'd be for her first, 30, 60 days. And we still do it now as a team. We don't do it 5 days a week anymore, but there's sort of this off team office hours of sorts where sometimes they go on and they talk about what they did last weekend or a concert that they saw or a TV show they're watching, but it's starting to kind of create that social hour. And unfortunately, the way the world is working, we have to block it in our calendar, but there's a time to go on and just get some human interaction. And it almost always turns right back to work-related pieces, but there's that place she can go and just ask a bunch of questions that isn't sending 14 emails out and kind of waiting on it.
Right. Yeah. Because the email, as Senia mentioned earlier, is actually quite an intimidating thing to press send on, isn't it? If you've got somebody who's like super busy and it's an inquiry and you're always wondering about, am I adding admin load to this person? Generally speaking, you don't want to do that. Someone just said, Jennifer just said in the chat, I thought it was quite interesting that her Gen Z college daughter basically has like a Discord running all the time. I wonder whether that's a good move for a company. Like maybe it's one of those where, like, Rhea, you have a place. If you're free, you're working, but you're kind of free, just drop in there. You can flick on, say, available, get on with your job. But it means that obviously people can ping you if they've got questions. And then, that's an always on available thing so that, whoever is either has a bit more free time or they've got particular questions or just, want to chill out, they can actually enter that space. It seems like it seems like a good idea to me anyway. Okay, let's talk about Facebook. So Mark Zuckerberg rolls out this thing today and he says, hey, it's all like, not today, a couple of days ago. He said, hey, it's all metaverse now. Check out sort of Horizons workspaces, where it looks like it's a way in which it's like a post-Zoom type of workspace, where essentially people can see an avatar of themselves. It's kind of 3D. You can sort of interact. There's a whiteboard. You can deal with things there. You can log in via laptop. You can also put on an Oculus on your head if you've got one. It's kind of trying to claw our way to a middle space between a screen-based experience and an in-person experience, because I think the feeling is maybe the full in-person experience may not be realistic anymore, right? May not be the thing we're getting. What are your thoughts on any of this AR, VR, mixed reality type of experience? Is this something worth experimenting with? This is open to everyone, by the way.
I think, sorry. Sorry, I'm just getting over it.
The pressure's on now, Kennedy. Well, you gotta say something.
I'm just laughing because I don't think you guys want to see what's around the rest of this room at home. I don't know what everybody else's at home office setup looks like, but there is one safe spot to put the camera. You don't want to be all immersive in my home life. But, you know, I think that there's going to be bits and pieces, but I don't think you can recreate. After speaking yesterday with 2 days ago with customers for the first time in 3D, that it's just so different. You can't recreate. It wasn't just like the main talk part of it. It was the before. It was the hallway conversations after. We joked that we're not necessarily missing the talks at conferences. We're missing sitting down next to someone who has the same job as you and networking, but not just to meet people, but to solve similar problems. And like, those are the kind of experiences. It's the hallway conversations that we're all missing. It's not the meeting itself.
And yes. See, I totally agree with that point. I think like a virtual whiteboard seems like a very odd concept. Like, why wouldn't I just write something down next to me? Like, that seems like more of a hassle to do something than something that's tech savvy. And personally, I think going back to the conversation a little bit earlier, I think what we're learning is everything is about individuality. So having different options for people who like different things. So like the happy hour, if some people want to get on and talk to their coworkers and just socialize, I think that's totally cool. I love the office hours idea because it's important for people to feel, especially as someone who is in an entry-level position and is training, like you want an open door and options and opportunities to be able to ask someone a question without being like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm asking you a question for the 60th time. Like, you have no idea. So props to you. I think that that's an amazing implementation on your part.
Guys, I'm looking at time and we're running short. So I want to just go into some questions for the Gen Z folks. What are you experiencing that employers are doing that you think is a really bad thing and that needs to go away, but they may just be ignorant of it? You know, if you could just remove one part of this experience, what would that be? Any thoughts? Go to you, Senya. We might have to go one-to-one on this rather than everybody. So Senya, any thoughts?
I think this isn't kind of specifically related to virtual in-person, but with just recruitment processes in general, and when you're applying to those first roles and you're applying to so many companies and so many different roles and just not getting, like not really being kept in the loop of what's actually happening in those recruitment processes, you know, not getting a confirmation email like, hey, we've received your application, you know, maybe getting some sort of information that if we haven't responded to you by, you know, X date, you unfortunately haven't got through, but kind of waiting for ages and ages for some sort of response from companies when you're trying to kind of keep track of all your different applications, and then kind of months later hearing back from a company that you almost like forgot that you applied to when you've already kind of, yeah. So I think just kind of the not keeping the applicant in the loop necessarily in application situations is like my, I guess, like biggest pet peeve when I'm doing recruitment processes.
I'm going to step in then before Nicole says, yeah, use iSIMS. That solves the problem. but in large part, it's tooling is a big part of it as well. A failure to do it, but quite right. Being like having an ambiguous outcome from an application is the worst thing, because that's where your anxiety is just through the roof. You can't concentrate on anything. You have to kind of know a black or white scenario. Okay, let's talk about deeper in the interview process. What's the one thing that recruiters are doing that you think is just no bueno? Any thoughts on that? Kennedy, go to you.
Yes. So when you get a message and you can tell right away that it is just a generalized message that they send to everyone, that really turns me off. I'm like, sometimes I'm like, is this spam? Like, is this even real? You know, if you don't look up the company right away, you're like, oh, I have no idea. And for me, I'm like, I want a recruiter who actually wants to take the time to get to know me, or they've checked out my LinkedIn or a different application I've submitted. To me, I think the process could be so much more personalized, and makes you feel special and makes you want to work there. It kind of wraps around to, like, you can tell someone's, a company's values and beliefs just by how they recruit as well.
Yep, absolutely. I get it. It's candidate experience, candidate care, and personalization, a big part of it. I totally get it. Actually, the noise was Rhea. So she's gone, so is that noise. But Rhea, great to have you. We'll definitely make sure that a report is circulated. Okay, final question for this. And Rachel, I don't want to put you in a bad position at all. But as we're talking about the recruiting side of things, like, having gone through this internship and you're working through it, what kind of things would you say, hey, that could have been improved for the next person that comes to do the path that you've gone on? How would you go ahead and improve that experience? Any one particular thing you can think of?
I think one thing would just be thinking about how we're engaging with both remote and in-person interns, especially like as we start to approach a more hybrid model where we have people coming in from different tracks. I know that's something, just working with the other interns, that we've been kind of struggling with. We have some like social gatherings, but we can't always invite interns who are remote, and we're just struggling to find a way to incorporate them in the same way. So I think that's definitely something that we can work on going forward, of how do we make not only the meetings and not only the networking, but also the social events more accessible for everyone at the same time.
Right. So basically there's a cohort of people that have come together, and you're all kind of in the same sort of career trajectory, so to speak. But like the opportunities to have a peer group built is actually quite difficult, because you're in different places geographically. There isn't a space where this can happen. Okay, super, super interesting. Folks, we are coming to the end of the show. So I want to just thank everybody for joining us. So thank you very much, everyone who's listening. We always do one thing, by the way, a new tradition on Brain Food Live is that we're going to help share everyone's LinkedIns. So very much in line with Rachel's last point about how do we kind of make sure we create better group communications? How do we make sure we stay connected? Everybody who's on the Crowdcast, please share your LinkedIn in the chat stream, and we're going to make sure you at least have availability of that. You can go talk to each other if you want to do that and extend this conversation. I think this conversation has been really quite excellent. So let me take this moment to say thank you to Rachel. Thank you for joining us and persevering with the tech. It's been great seeing you. We'll say thank you also to Kennedy. Thanks for joining us, Kennedy. A safe trip to Budapest, I believe, soon. So enjoy that, and we'll keep in touch, of course. And Senya, great to see you. Wasn't there something we needed to do? It was like your survey or something. Have you done the survey?
I've now done the survey. It's completed, but I will be sharing some interesting results on my LinkedIn regarding kind of gender bias and language in recruitment situations. So if anyone wants to read more about that, I'll put my LinkedIn in the chat, and feel free to kind of connect with me.
Definitely. We haven't even talked about gender today, even though I think, you know, it was mentioned in the chat stream, but that may be something we need to do for another show. Okay. Senya, great to see you. I will keep in touch, I hope. Have a very Absolutely. Good day. And that was it. Wasn't that interesting, Nicole?
That was amazing. Thank you for orchestrating all this and, you know, having us all participate in such a dynamic and, you know, lively conversation around what is on the mind of those in the Gen Z sort of grouping, if you will.
Do you know what, Nicole? I'm actually very conscious of this sort of challenge between having a really polished, recorded type of way of doing it, and then sort of this issue of, you know, is it complete chaos and it's no good? So Brain Food has always been a little bit trying to mix the two a little bit to say, right, is basic structure, but I do want to keep calling people on and off screen. I think that's important because there's so much more that people have to say that often don't get the chance to say it. In the next kind of way time we do this, maybe it's a case where, you know, we bring on a different cohort. We're going to be talking another thing a couple of weeks, actually. We're going to talk the reverse ageism in recruiting. Like, how are we organizing the our recruiting processes? And again, with the future change of work, etc., how does that impact a different demographic that's had a lot of experience but now is in a different sort of phase of life? How do they experience the world of work? And there's going to be some fascinating stuff. Similar format, we're going to bring some folks on screen and they're going to talk with us on their opinions. So that should be a good one. Okay, Nicole, I just want to say thank you for joining me and being a co-host. You were awesome. Welcome back anytime, by the way.
This was super fun.
Cool. You have a good day, Nicole.
All right, bye everybody.
Cool. Wasn't that great, everybody? I hope you enjoyed the show. I certainly did. We'll be back again next week. If you've enjoyed this type of conversational format, make sure you follow the Crowdcast channel. We're doing this every Friday. We've actually got a super interesting show next week. We're talking about building culture in a hybrid world of work. How do you do it when you've got people in different parts potentially of the world? How do you build a culture? Culture has been very much centered around the office environment, this in-person stuff that we're no longer getting, at least no longer getting for everybody who works in the company. How do we actually think about creating an inclusive culture when people are geographically in different spots? Make sure you tune into that. Okay, folks, that's it. We'll see you next week.